Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Gentlemen, The Turning, The Color Out of Space, The Last Full Measure, and The Song of Names. I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Addams Family and Countdown. But first, if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First piece of news is a rest in peace. Terry Jones, who is best known for being one of the original Monty Pythons, actually just the Monty Pythons. Monty Python never got new people in or out. They never like lost a member and got a new member in. Even when Graham Chapman died in the 90s, I think it was in the 90s that Graham Chapman passed away, They never replaced him, because this wasn't like a band where somebody would pass away and you'd get a new singer or a new drummer. They were a unique group of individuals who had the most unique sense of humor that you've ever seen in movie or television history. I discovered Monty Python when I was a teenager. I think I was in middle school. I have a great Monty Python story. My sister and I had rented or got from the library The Meaning of Life, which is one of their most raw movies they have. And we loved Monty Python because we'd watched Monty Python's Flying Circus. And we thought that was a hilarious show. And we took it home. And at that time, we weren't allowed to watch R-rated movies. That one's rated R. And we said to my parents, I said, can we watch this? And my dad's like, you can watch it, but you got to wait till I come home and I got to watch it with you. Now, if you've seen, there's stuff I can't talk about on the radio in The Meaning of Life, because I'll just get kicked off of all my stations. But my sister and I came home from school that day and we looked at each other and we go, let's watch it now. Because we had a feeling that we weren't going to be permitted to watch it till its end. So we start watching The Meaning of Life and we are howling at this movie. We are laughing so hard at this film. And we look at each other. And I mean, like, each scene, it just gets worse and worse. And we're like, oh, yeah, no, Dad's not going to let us watch this. And we're not going to get through the first 20 minutes, let alone the entire movie. And so we watched it, and we laughed. We rewound the tape. And then my dad came home. We said, okay, let's sit down and watch this with him, which is very – it's not an easy movie to watch with your parents because of all the crass jokes going on there. And so we start watching it. And, like, even in that first scene – which I don't even think I can say the name of the song that they're doing in the first scene. And my dad looks at us and goes, I think you two better go upstairs. And so my sister and I went upstairs. We're like, okay, yes, Dad, we're real nice. We go upstairs and we're giggling and laughing because we knew it. And then about 5 minutes later, my dad comes upstairs. He's like, I don't think you guys should watch this. And then we were good and we confessed. We said, Father, we cannot tell a lie. We already watched it. We watched it when we got home. And we didn't, amazingly, we did not get in trouble for that, because at that point, the cat's out of the bag. You know, at that point, he's like, okay. He's like, I guess you can watch it again if you want, because it's so, there's so much nudity and sex and inappropriate content in that. And that was one of my favorite Monty Python moments in my life. And Terry Jones was essential to this group, as any of them were, whether you're talking Eric Idle or John Cleese or Graham Chapman, like he said, who's no longer with us, and he hasn't been with us for, gosh, almost 30 years. But Terry Jones, people don't realize that, oh, you're just Sir Bedivere from Spamalot, but he was more than that. He directed a lot of these things. He did some sharing of directing credit with Terry Gilliam, but he directed the Meaning of Life and the Life of Brian and the Holy Grail. He was so critical to this. And, you know, through the years, you know, we're getting to the point where they've all aged. I mean, we lost Graham Chapman in the 90s, but they've all aged. And, you know, everyone has a limited time on Earth. And I remember seeing this movie about 5 years ago called Boom Bust Boom, which he did the wraparound, it was the host of it, basically. And it was just about economic booms and busts. And it's the very last thing he ever did because it's so sad. He had dementia. He was kind of losing his mind, and he ended up dying from complications of dementia. So the last time I really saw Terry Jones on anything shown was Boom Bust Boom. So I encourage anybody to go check that one out because it's the last thing he did that I know of. And he was such a funny guy. And like all the Pythons, they all found a path after Monty Python disbanded. Once Graham Chapman passed away, you know, they came back for reunions here and then, you know, but, you know, they weren't a touring group. And by the time the 80s were over and they'd done Meaning of Life and they'd done some of their tours, you know, they were finishing up and they came back together here and there. But yeah, he was such a brilliant guy. He was so funny and he seemed to be very nice too. You know, when you hear the Pythons talking about each other, even before he passed away, because everyone always talks about everyone nicely when they pass away. But even before he passed away, you know, years ago, you hear these arguments and you can tell which Pythons were the hardest to deal with in the writer's room. No one ever complained about Terry Jones. So yeah, he's going to be missed. He died. He was 77 years old and he changed the face of humor globally along with the other Pythons in a way that no one else could. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to talk about is Horse Girl, which opens on January 27th. It's a Netflix movie, so it's coming out pretty quickly.
Been having a little trouble sleeping. Finding myself places and I don't know how I got there. Do you believe in alien abductions? People always said that my grandma was so crazy. Now I think that she wasn't crazy at all because I'm feeling it.
Sarah, do you know what happened to the wall? Those scratches?
I know it sounds really crazy, but it just feels really real.
The reason this kind of hit my radar is mainly I'm a big fan of Alison Brie. I think she's very funny. Ever since I saw her in Community, I think she has such a great presence and she's beautiful, but she's also very funny. Of course, she does Glow, which there's two big reasons why I like the pilot of Glow. But I'm not a huge fan of the series, but I like the fact that she was able to capitalize off of the success of Community into doing more than just like a talk show host, which is what, you know, say somebody like Joel McHale has. Not that Joel McHale's slumming it or anything. I think he kind of wants to be the other version of Ryan Seacrest. But Alison Brie plays a woman who looks like she's going insane, who has some mental issues. And she plays that well because she plays that high-strung, problematic person quite well. You saw it all over the place in Community. The next one I want to hit really quickly is the Black Widow teaser. It was promoted as a behind-the-scenes clip, but really it's a teaser for the movie, and this one opens on May 1st.
After all this time, what brings you home?
I'm on the run.
I was trying to do something good. You more than just a trained killer.
You're fooling yourself. We are still both trained killers.
There's a new world of widows. New enemies. I'm done running from my past.
Hey, I'm in. This looks interesting. I also love the fact that Florence Pugh is in it because I think she had one of the most stellar years this last year. Even movies she was in that I wasn't a huge fan of. I was not a huge fan of Midsommar or Little Women, but I thought she was like the best in both of those. So yeah, it's great to see her in it. I think this looks like it's going to be a fun movie. It looks like it's going to be an interesting movie and a new path that the Marvel movies can take where you don't necessarily have almost magical superpowers. You're just so good at what you're doing. She's sort of the Batman assassin of the Marvel Universe. So yeah, that looks good. I'm curious to see this one. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Gentleman and The Color Out of Space. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews, and actually I'm going to do the big one right now, and that is The Gentlemen. Matthew McConaughey plays a marijuana magnate in England who wants to sell his business but faces double-crossing by his many rivals.
There once was a young and foolish dragon who came to ask a wise and cunning lion about acquiring his territory. Now, the lion, he wasn't interested, so he told the little dragon to fight. The dragon, he persisted.
Oh, goody. He started a war.
So the lion took the little dragon for a walk and put 5 bullets in his little dragon head.
He's warming up now, isn't it?
There's a message in there.
This is a Guy Ritchie movie. He wrote and directed it. And this is him going back to the well. This is sort of him trying to capture the pre-Madonna Guy Ritchie. This evokes feelings of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatched, which are his first early films. And those were about crime in England and sort of is this from the street level. And the difference between this one was those were all about the thugs, the people who are dealing on the street, whereas The Gentlemen are about the people higher up in the organization. They're about the people who are running the business or the second in command. And while they have the street thugs in there, it's very much the higher echelon of the business, the gentleman, so to speak. And when I say gentleman, it's not like, well, I'm a gentleman because I'm an Englishman. They're gentlemen the way you go to a gentleman's club and you see other gentlemen. There's a lot of ungentlemanly behavior that goes on in the gentleman's club. There's a lot of ungentlemanly outfits that guys wear at these so-called gentlemen's club. You know, you always can tell, you know, whoever's wearing. You know, very few people are showing up in three-piece suits and ordering single malt scotch at a gentleman's club. People are showing up in sweatpants and a jean jacket and ordering a Bud Light. And that's, you know, depending on the club. But it evokes the people, you know, you're supposed to be a gentleman. And so there's a lot of ungentlemanly behavior in The Gentlemen. And basically, it's the story of this gang war that erupts, and it's all twisted around, and there's a lot of turns and double crossing, and it's framed behind one of the people in the organization is basically being pitched a blackmail by Hugh Grant. And Hugh Grant apparently knows all this stuff. He's one of those people who just gathers the information so he can use it against other people. And it's unraveling this whole story that's going on. And, you know, it's far beyond your typical drugs and thugs movie. It's intricately written. And at times, the beginning is a little bit harder to get through because there's a lot of talking. And I mean, almost like a Quentin Tarantino movie where it's just talking and setting it up and taking their time. And then while there's bursts of actions and bursts of things going on, you don't know how everything ties together. And so it does seem rather random at the beginning. But unlike most movies, where most movies kind of have a great start and can peter off at the end, this one does the opposite. It has a bit of a rocky start, keeping everything together. But once we start seeing, oh, now this stuff is tying up together, now this stuff is making sense, that's what makes the movie great. And as it steamrolls to the end, it gets stronger and stronger. And that's a good thing to do with a movie. So you've already got people will be invested. They'll be like, I'll stick around and see if the second act gets better. But, you know, if you got a crappy third act, you're just going to leave the theater disappointed. But this one works. And I think it's a slick, fun, at times very humorous, but also very dark movie. And it's got a great cast. You know, McConaughey's in it. You've got Hugh Grant. You've got Charlie Hunnam. You've got Colin Farrell in there. You got Eddie Marsan. It's a really good cast of people, and it's kind of nice to see a return to form for Guy Ritchie. So I'd like to see more of this kind of stuff. So I'm going to have to say that The Gentleman rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is The Color Out of Space. Nicolas Cage stars in H.P. Lovecraft's favorite of his own stories about a family dealing with the mysterious meteorite that lands on their property.
Then everything just blew up.
big flash, like a pink light. Or actually, I don't even know what color it was. It wasn't like any color I'd ever seen before. It
looks like a meteorite. And it's radioactive? I mean, it's from space, right?
Meteorites are generally no more dangerous than ordinary rocks.
How can something that big just disappear? Did you plant those?
No.
I'm a huge fan of H.P. Lovecraft. There are these writers that are sort of like historical horror writers. You're talking about Edgar Allan Poe, and you're talking about H.P. Lovecraft. And there's other ones that are out there, but those are your two biggies. And I mean, I like Poe's stuff. Poe's stuff's interesting, and Poe's stuff is the most easily adaptable into movies, even if they're loose adaptations like the stuff that Roger Corman did. But H.P. Lovecraft has held a certain special part in my heart because his stuff is so out there. You will never read anything quite like the bizarre things that happen in an H.P. Lovecraft story. And probably the most successful adaptation, film adaptation of H.P. Lovecraft is the Reanimator series with Jeffrey Combs. The first one's really the best movie, but that just does turn into a zombie movie. H.P. Lovecraft played with some really crazy stuff. They have the Cthulhu mythos, where you have these giant, monstrous, undescribable things with tentacle faces coming out of this interdimensional rift, and that's really cool. And I love that kind of stuff, and it's always been hard to bring that to life in a movie. Now, there were some attempts to do H.P. Lovecraft stuff. The Full Moon people who did, which they're still around, Full Moon, I think, but they were like a direct-to-video. Charles Band ran the production house, and he did Reanimator, but he did other stuff like The Unnameable, and I think he worked with Stuart Gordon to do stuff. And they did some great stuff in the 90s, but you've never realized true Lovecraft. And The Color Out of Space is a bizarre story, but it's executed exceptionally well, especially if you compare it to how the original story is laid out. The original story is laid out sort of in memory and what had happened, so they make it more contemporary. And you've got Nicolas Cage and Jolie Richardson. They're the parents in this house, but there's crazy stuff going on once this meteorite lands and it changes things. And I you know, Richard Stanley directs it, and he's known for doing some a little bit more fringe work in the 90s. He did stuff like Hardware, and I think he did Dust Devil. And I think Stanley does a great job preserving the feel of what the story was, even in this modern setting. And it's not easily digestible, but that's the way Lovecraft stuff is. So this is one of the better Lovecraft movies I've seen. You know, topping stuff like the Dunwich Horror with Dean Stockwell and Sandra Dee back in the 70s. So yeah, kudos to the studio for putting together a very authentic feeling H.P. Lovecraft movie. Even when Nicolas Cage goes full Cage at one point and then it gets a little goofy, that's not the best part. It's the framework and the atmosphere of this movie that I think is what makes it work. So I'm going to have to say The Color Out of Space, lots of fun. It rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Last Full Measure and The Turning. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews, and let's talk about The Last Full Measure. We're going to play the trailer, and I'm also going to play an interview with Dale Dye, who's he's a decorated veteran of the Vietnam War, and you've seen him in dozens of movies, all the way going back to Platoon and Band of Brothers and The Pacific. He worked on this movie, and he plays a role as a senator in this film. This interview comes from Colonel Denny Gillum's Frontlines of Freedom radio show that you may hear on this station. It's distributed by the same company that does Fat Guys at the Movies. And Colonel Gillum did an interview with Dale Dye about the film The Last Full Measure. So I want to play that after the trailer so you can get him talking about the film and what his involvement was, and then I'll give you a quick review on the other end. So, in The Last Full Measure, 30 years after an American hero in Vietnam gave his life to save his fellow soldiers, the veterans band together to get his honor upgraded to the Medal of Honor.
Operation Abilene was one of the bloodiest battles of the Vietnam War.
Everybody down!
An entire company nearly wiped out.
We are taking fire!
Prayed for a miracle. One came. His name is Pitts.
Pitts saved lives.
We put him up for the Medal of Honor.
But he never got the medal.
Justice delayed is justice denied.
As a Vietnam vet and as an infantryman, that preview rattled my cage. I lost one man to friendly fire, my first tour, and I was in the 1st Division when that was going on. That was horrible. Talk to us about the real story of The Last Full Measure.
Well, as you said, Denny, it involves the 1st Infantry Division, a unit of the 1st Infantry Division, in April of 1966. The unit of the division was involved in a really nasty fight near Binh. And they got into this fight. They couldn't get out of the fight. They were being overrun at one point. They were being chopped up, carved up very badly. Reinforcements couldn't reach them at the time. And they had a lot of casualties on the ground. They called Pedro. They called the Air Force Rescue and Recovery Service to help them medevac. And a couple of helicopters from the 38th Aerial Rescue and Recovery Service arrived overhead. And they started lowering some of their medics, some of their Air Force pararescue guys, down onto the ground to help that first ID outfit evacuate its casualties. The incoming never stopped. They were still getting pounded, mortars, small arms, all over the place. And one of those rescue men, one of those Air Force rescue men, Airman First Class William Pitzenbarger, decided that the infantry on the ground needed his assistance. The people in his helicopter were telling him, get out of there, get out of there, get out of there. We've got a load, get out of there. But he refused. He stayed on the ground. He stayed with the infantry, whose medics had mostly been killed or badly wounded. So he became their medic. And he ran out and pulled more and more and more of them back into the perimeter. And he did it, some of the most heroic things that any of the infantrymen from that first ID outfit had ever seen. And he stayed with them on the ground until, unfortunately, he was killed in trying to pull one of the wounded men back into the perimeter. Now, at the time when the battle was finally over and the bodies were collected, Pitzenbarger posthumously was awarded the Air Force Cross. But those infantrymen, those survivors from the first ID on the ground, said that wasn't enough. He should rate America's highest decoration, the Medal of Honor. And they couldn't do anything about it at the time. They were specialists and corporals and sergeants, and they couldn't get this done. But they absolutely would not let the instance die. And for years and years and years after that fight, after the Vietnam War was over, they got together and they said, we're not going to let this guy be forgotten. We are not going to let Pitzenbarger's memory go down with just the Air Force Cross. He deserves the Medal of Honor, and we're going to fight until we get it. And our movie, The Last Full Measure, directed and written by Todd Robinson, with some assist from me, tells that story of these veterans who come together and will not, they're like bulldogs with a bone in their teeth. They will not let this issue go away, despite the fact that the government vastly wants it to go away.
Thank you, Colonel Gillum, for letting us borrow this interview. And hopefully that gives you guys a good look at what this movie is about. It's the crux of this movie is not about Vietnam. And I think that makes it an interesting film because it's not a Vietnam film. if you put that in sort of air quotes. When you ever have a movie about Vietnam, there's a lot of contemplation and there's a lot of discussion. You know, when you have a movie about World War II, that's a flag waving of war. That's one that everyone remembers as being a necessity to be in. But a lot of people question Vietnam. Even now, they look back and was this an appropriate war? Blah blah blah. And that's the cinema that has dealt with Vietnam deals with that a lot, going back to the Oliver Stone movies and even you know, Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now. But this doesn't deal with the war and the politics of the war. It deals with the hero. And regardless of the war you're in, the act of heroism is an act of heroism. And in this particular situation, it's about this pararescuer who goes down and he saves dozens of lives. Ends up losing his own, but he saved dozens of lives. And he was awarded, I think, the Silver Star, but they wanted to upgrade the medal. And for, if you're not in the military, you don't quite understand the importance of the Medal of Honor. It's the highest honor that a person can be awarded in the military. And it's about the veterans trying to get this process happening. And so you see a lot of the sort of the sausage being made, the bureaucratic wrangling that has to happen for this to go on. And yeah, they focus a little bit on like the PTSD on some of these soldiers after they got home. And you've got some great actors, people like Samuel L. Jackson, Peter Fonda in his final role. You've got William Hurt all playing the vets. And that's really what it's about. It's about what they went through. So I think it's going to have much more meaning to, if you're in the military or you're a military family or you know people in the military, it's going to make more sense to you, what's going on. It might be a little bit in the weeds for people who have no idea what goes on from a military standpoint. Anyways, I'm going to say The Last Full Measure kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about The Turning. Not much to say, but let's talk quickly. A young woman becomes the governess of two children after their parents die, only to discover a mysterious and possibly spiritual threat.
This is my first live-in job.
Well, I hope you know what you're doing.
The children are very special, Kate.
They're thoroughbreds.
Geez, your friends must love it here.
I have no friends.
You have no friends?
Yep.
Well, you have one now.
Maybe.
What happened to your last nanny?
Like I'd tell.
This was not screened. It doesn't look terribly good. It was not very well promoted at all. And when you drop something like this in January, it's a horror movie. We generally don't get good horror movies in January. You get PG-13 fluff. You get stuff like The Grudge, even though I think The Grudge was rated R. The Grudge was a crappy movie. You got to beware these horror films that release in January. They just don't seem to click. And there are times when you can release a horror movie and they do well. And the other thing is, even like horror fans don't like these kind of movies because they kind of are just, you know, softball horror movies. They're not even for like good solid horror movie fans. There's a lot of cool stuff that gets released on demand, like The Color Out of Space, which I talked about in the last segment. So yeah, I wouldn't expect much from The Turning. It wasn't screened. I'm just cursorily referencing it, and it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Song of Names, The Box Office, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Addams Family and Countdown. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish things up with the review of The Song of Names. Years after a Polish musical prodigy leaves his adoptive family on the eve of an important concert, his adoptive brother searches for him to find answers.
From the depths of my soul, I must ask you not to find me.
He is genius. I go back to Warsaw to my wife and daughters. If I can find somebody to teach David, I leave him here.
I have a family in mind, Mr. Rappaport.
My own son is David's age,
and I can promise you the tenets of your religion will be fully respected.
Why are you wasting your time finding David after half a lifetime?
I might be all he's got.
Okay, first of all, my blurb of that movie sounds way more interesting than the movie itself. I was bored stiff through this film. And part of it, it's not just boring in terms of the subject matter and the things that happen in it. The cinematography's boring. Everything's poorly lit. Everything's very dark. Everything takes place at night. There's no like bright scenes in it whatsoever. It's this drab, maudlin, heavy, you feel like you've overdosed on codeine when you watch this film. And the story itself sounds like it's like an interesting little take because you're like, ooh, what's the mystery? And I mean, there's a certain interest when you finally get it revealed what happens and why the person left. But I didn't connect to the characters. Part of it is because the kid in the main character, the one who's the musical prodigy, he's kind of a jerk. He doesn't respect his own talent. He's grown up. He's like in his early 20s when he's going to do this concert. But when he doesn't do it, it basically financially ruins his stepfather. To the point that it took the guy to the grave. And of course, the stepbrother is going to be resentful and have a problem with it. And they try to explain it away. And you sit there and when they finally give you an explanation, you're like, okay, I get the emotional impact and the significance of this. But just still really screwed somebody over and ruined them financially. There's no excuse for that. If you have something that's that emotionally impactful, you find a way to cover all of it. I just felt there were weak characters. And even though there's some serious stuff that happens, the characters don't handle things right. And Tim Roth is the stepbrother trying to track him down as an adult. And while, I mean, the acting's fine, but it's just, it's just so boring. I appreciate what they're trying to do with this movie, but it's just wickedly boring and shot, like you're looking through a muddy glass. So it's just, the Song of Names thought was awful. So it totally sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk quickly about the box office. It was no surprise last week that Bad Boys won. What was a surprise was how well Bad Boys did. It made $62 million, which was way more than anyone expected. And I think that that's a good thing because Michael Bay didn't direct it. And the fact that this was a bigger hit than something that Michael Bay would have directed, I think shows that we need to just back off of Michael Bay because his movies are garbage. So that $62 million, I don't know if the gentleman's going to beat that this weekend because that's a lot to overcome. Even if it drops 50%, it's still in the 30s. And of course, you have 1970 doing well. And Dr. Doolittle, the Doolittle movie, it came in over $20 million, which is above expectations. It's still going to struggle to meet its $175 million budget. But I like the fact that Doolittle did fine, because that's a movie that I think people unfairly jumped on. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first one is The Addams Family. A bizarre family moves into town, and the people who want to keep their neighborhood normal conspire against them.
Get out!
It's hideous.
It's horrible.
It's home. Don't forget to kick your father goodnight.
Yes, mother.
Boxley, blow F6! Fire in the hole!
This animated version of The Addams Family was one of the biggest pleasant surprises I've had so far in 2020. This was unfortunately not screened, and so I didn't see it in its theatrical release, and it did quite well. It made like $100 million, and it only had like a $24 million budget, which is pretty small for an animated film like this. But I remember it getting kind of maligned in the press, and the take I was hearing was, well, it's kind of cheesy and it skews too young and it's kind of got this corny story. It's not what we remembered Adam's Family to be. And I watch this movie and I'm like, are you kidding me? This movie's exactly what the Addams Family was. It may not be the Addams Family from the movies that they made in the 90s that Barry Sonnenfeld directed, and those were good, but go back to the original Addams Family TV show. This is exactly the kind of thing that they had in the TV show. You know, of course, you had all the weirdness of the Addams Family, and I love that. They kind of give him an origin story, but that's not what the entire movie was about. You very quickly get to the part where they're living in this goofy haunted mansion museum where people come to see him. In these Addams Family shows on TV, it was like, there was always like some guy is going in to sell insurance, or Morticia wanted to like join the ladies club. And of course the ladies didn't want to have anything to do with her. They're terrified of her. And I'm like, that's exactly what it was. It was this clash between these goofy, weird, crazy families and the normal people in the world. Like in this movie, Wednesday Addams goes to junior high school and she interacts with the kids. That's exactly the kind of thing you would have had in the original Addams. You have them going and interacting with the normals out there, and the normals not even being able to take it. And that's what I found so fun with this movie. I enjoyed the heck out of this. I thought this was one of the best surprises in terms of like tribute to horror elements, better than the Hotel Transylvania movies, which those are cute for what they are. So I enjoyed the heck out of the Addams Family. I think it's absolutely worth checking out. And if you got kids, it works. And even if you don't have kids, it's funny and silly and irreverent and very much like the original TV show. So I'm going to have to say the Addams Family Blu-ray totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The final movie I want to talk about is in the home cinema roundup, and that is Countdown. A group of young adults discover a smartphone application that predicts their death and haunts them down if they try to avoid it.
The Countdown app, it's really just a random number with a clock. It's not that scary, but it seems like it worked on YouTube clowns.
This must be everyone that downloaded the app.
My sister, she downloaded it.
All we need to do is beat the clock by 1 second.
What if this doesn't work?
A fate much worse than death will pursue you until you are utterly destroyed.
I just got done maligning The Turning. Countdown falls into a subcategory of that, which I think is actually a little bit better. There is every generation horror movies that are not respected in their time. The slasher movies from the 80s were not respected in their time. The video nasties of the 70s were not respected in their time. And over the years, they have grown to become classics in the genre. I think what we're seeing is the development of a new set of classics. These PG-13 horror movies that maybe aren't that great, but give a little twist to everything. They have something somewhat clever. Truth or Dare, even though I didn't think that's a great movie, that one kind of fits that mold where there's something more to it. There's a little catch to it. Or Happy Death Day was another one that one did very well. But that one had a little twist on the genre. It wasn't just a slasher coming and killing people. It wasn't just a monster. There was something to it. Even the Sinister movie that had this demon that haunted, this film. And what's going on in Countdown completely fits that mold. Now, it's not a highly violent movie. It's a PG-13 movie, and it's aimed for teenagers, and it's got some really goofy stuff that happens in the plot. But you know what? I gotta say, it's a neat little twist that this Countdown app, and it's a demon inside of it trying to keep you to, you know, you're gonna die anyways. And if you try to change it, it comes after you. And that's, I think, kind of cool. I thought it was a neat little twist. And I think those are what's gonna be remembered from this era. You know, down the road, but you're going to get horror fans who grew up on this. You're going to get a 14-year-old kid who watched these in the theaters. And then in 30 years, they're going to be like, I remember the movies from the, you know, late teens and early 20s. And that's going to be the classics of those days. And I think Countdown falls into that. Now, the DVD has nothing else on it. There's no special features, but it's an interesting little movie. I found it fun and distracting. It's not great, but it works. I want to give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also out this week on DVD and Blu-ray, you have Jay and Silent Bob's Reboot, Zombieland Double Tap, and Black and Blue. And that's it. Next week, I'll be back talking about the rhythm section and Gretel and Hansel. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.